This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg.
Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is behind the proverbial glass, getting us on and off the air. Jam-packed 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Coming up in about 30 minutes' time, Jarmo Kekalainen, general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Richard Pollock had an opportunity to sit down and talk to him about 45 minutes ago. We'll bring you that interview. Richie, why don't you sort of tease that one a little bit ahead of it coming up? We're going to play it in its entirety at 6:30 this evening, but you had an opportunity to spend about 15 minutes with him. What did he have to say?
We talked, you know, I think the purpose of this show, Drew, is to kind of go around the National Hockey League and see what other teams are doing, and other teams being teams that aren't the Jets. Jarmo Kekalainen's a really interesting story in the way he got to the National Hockey League, and he's a Finnish-born guy. He played his university in the ECAC with Clarkson, ended up getting a job with Ottawa, and we talk about in the interview how he got to the position he got to now, and that's, of course, the general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's very forthright. If you want to go that whole American dream thing, if you listen to his story, it shows you some perseverance and some hard work and the right, I think probably the right personal dynamics with the people he's dealing with as well. All of these factor into why he is where he is now. And I think if you are into that kind of storytelling, then listening to Jarmo Kekalainen talk about the people he ran into as well. You know, hockey's such a small community, Drew, and you think about where he came from. Well, he started in Ottawa. Listen to who he worked with in Ottawa. Then listen to who he worked with in St. Louis. Listen to what he was doing in Finland. On two different occasions, he was in the Finnish Elite League as a general manager. And there's some differences and there's some similarities there. And he talks about those as well. So I could have talked to him probably for 3 hours. And I just, the 15, 60 minute snippet, I think, is an interesting look into who Jarmo Kekalainen is and how he wants to run the Blue Jackets.
We'll have that interview in its entirety in about 30 minutes time, 6:30 this evening. We'll play that interview with Columbus Blue Jackets general manager Jarmo Kekalainen. As well tonight at 7:15, Michael Trakos from the National Post, good friend of the program, frequent guest on this show, will join us, talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs, rather, the team that he covers for the National Post. Mm-hmm. And, of course, everything else from the hockey world we'll have in store for you this evening. But let's start with the Winnipeg Jets and the chatter that's going around regarding the Winnipeg Jets coaching situation. Obviously, the Jets are not on to a great start, a 4-5-1 record in their first 10. A first 10 games that we had said at the beginning of the year were a relatively easy 10 games. 8 of the 10 being at home. And, obviously, the Jets have not gotten off to the start that they wanted. Various reports, and they're all sort of couched in speculative terms. If the Jets wanted to do something, maybe right. The Jets are looking to do something, but they have both Dale Hawerchuk and Mike Haviland as the front runners to be the next head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, if that is an avenue they choose to explore. Let's start with the question to begin with. Do you think that the Jets are in the market for a new head coach at this point?
I'll start off, and then I'll let Richie get in here. To my knowledge, I haven't heard that they're in the market for a coach. And again, to my knowledge, I haven't heard anything that Claude Noel's job is on the line. But Darren Dreger of TSN made a comment about it and said that the likelihood of him finishing the season is probably just as good as the likelihood that he is let go. But let's start with something right here, boys. The start has been bad. And you mentioned that the schedule was easy. And it really was easy in the sense that 8 of the first 10 games were at home. As far as the opponents, okay, maybe the opponents weren't as difficult maybe as they could have been. Mm-hmm. You have Chicago coming up 3 times in November. Mm-hmm. You've got Detroit. You're going to see Nashville a bunch of times.
Detroit twice in November.
Detroit twice in November. So those are 5 games right there that you'd have to say it'll be tough for them to win those games, because those are 2 top teams in the Western and Eastern Conference.
If you could take 2 of those 5 games,
right,
given where everything is right now, you'd probably take that.
Right. And again, I don't want to sidestep the issue here. I'll let Richie get in here for a second. But as far as where Claude Noel stands, we talked about it before the season started, and I said that absolutely not is he on the hot seat. But the way they have started, not just the record, you don't want to just look at the record, because they were probably lucky to beat LA. They were, you could argue that they were fortunate to beat the St. Louis Blues, a top team in the Western Conference. But as far as the way the team has played on a night-in and night-out basis, there have been some no-shows. The Dallas Stars home game was a no-show. Mm-hmm. The Nashville Predators game was a no-show. They should have beat the Nashville Predators. With all due respect to Carter Hutton, they probably could have given him a harder time and at least gotten a couple goals on him. Now, do I think that Claude Noel's job is in jeopardy right now as we speak? I think there's a good chance. I don't have any indication that it is in jeopardy, but I definitely wouldn't say Claude Noel is as comfortable as he was 2.5 weeks ago. I would say that with certainty.
Yeah, it's interesting speculation, Drew. You know, I've come on record saying in the offseason, what I think Claude Noel is I think Claude Noel will deliver to your team, deliver a record that I think is probably in line with your team's talent level. I don't think the Jets have an exceptionally high talent level. I don't think he's going to get much more out of them. The issue, of course, seems to be, or is if the team, you know, the management and ownership's expectations for the team are not in line with maybe the realistic expectations that Claude Noel has. Maybe there's a disconnect there. So I do agree with Ezzy. I don't think he is as settled in his position as he was at the beginning of the season. And we could say, oh, it's only been 10 games. Yeah, but that's an eighth of the season. And 10 games, you know, you don't want to fall too far behind. You know, Elliot Friedman talked about how many teams make the playoffs if they're more than, I think, 4 points out at the end of October. And that's always disconcerting if you look at it that way. But when you look at it, okay, what about a coaching change? Well, what's the purpose? Is because if you're going to change coaches, you say, oh, it's too early. Are you going to change coaches to make the playoffs this year? Because then maybe it isn't too early. But if you're going to change coaches to change coaches for the foreseeable future, meaning if you don't believe Claude Noel is the future coach, you went into the year with him, you know, he didn't have a tumultuous kind of tenure like Philadelphia last year with a terrible season. He didn't have a Philadelphia awful season. So you understand why he's on thin ice, you know, being Laviolette when he got let go. And Philadelphia makes some quick decisions, always have. But if you really weren't comfortable with him, you would have let him go, and then you would have conducted a coaching search. So my point is, if you hire somebody mid-season, it's very difficult to have a coaching search when some of the great coaches are assistants. You can't, it just doesn't happen.
Sure.
Teams don't let him go in the middle of the season.
Oh, if you wanted to do that in the off-season last year, you look at your options that would have been available. Alain Vigneault, very familiar with the organization. Right. Lindy Ruff, by all accounts, most people think he's a high-quality head coach.
Sure. Scott Arneil,
again, familiar with the organization. But I mean, John Tortorella, if they wanted to go the hard-ass route.
But the idea is,
oh boy, that would be problems if John Tortorella was the Jets coach here, guys.
Yeah, but you know, the idea is, so then are you getting rid of the coach theoretically to make the playoffs this year? Because then you're limiting your coaching pool. And so the names you've heard, Dale Hawerchuk, obviously ties to the organization, mm-hmm. the former organization and apparently the current organization.
Coach Scheifele and Barry.
Right. Or you have Mike Havlin, ties directly to Kevin Cheveldayoff, a guy you haven't really heard his name mentioned in other coaching positions since the Jets hired Claude Noel, sure. But a guy who Cheveldayoff obviously was comfortable with, and some would say was equal to or higher than Noel on his list in terms of who the Jets were going to hire.
Sure, it's worth noting that the Jets, when they first came back, they interviewed Havlin.
Absolutely.
For the job.
Him
and McTavish and Noel, who ended up getting the job, of course.
And then
Craig Ramsey got a courtesy interview more than
Kirk
anything.
Kirk Muller, too, I think.
Might have,
I don't remember that far back. But
I think Richie raises a good point here, because we know that True North is as an organization, first off, is well-run, but it's a very loyal organization. And we know, and Gary touched on this on Hustler and Lawless yesterday, this is going to be a tough decision if they do decide to let Claude Noel go. It's not going to be something that just happens because of a couple of weeks. I mean, obviously what's happened in the couple of weeks isn't what the Jets would have predicted or would have liked, I should say. But this is going to be a tough decision here. And Richie mentions, you know, if they make the decision to get a new coach, is this going to be more about next year or is it going to be about this year? And we know, guys, that this year the Jets want to make the playoffs. The moves that they made were, you could argue, were more short-term than long-term. I'm talking about going to get Devin Setoguchi, going to get Michael Frolik, not buying out Olli Jokinen, keeping Olli Jokinen because he's a lame duck. He probably won't be back next year. I'd be surprised if he is, but stranger things have happened. I'm on the radio. So I think that if they do...
That one always gets me.
I think that if they do decide to make a coaching change, it's going to be because they don't like where the team is going in the short term and the long term.
Right. But you mentioned expectations. So if they expect to make the playoffs and most people projected them probably not to make the playoffs,
well, that's
then that's another question. That's another issue you have. But I don't, I'm on record before as saying, you know, I've already stated my position, you know, on Claude Noel. You know, again, the issue and the concern I have is also internally in terms of the players. And I kind of, let me actually get, I'll take this off as a little bit of a tangent. The comments by Andrew Ladd, I thought, were kind of peculiar yesterday. I don't know if you heard them before the game. They were airing him on the Jumbotron in a scrum. And he was saying, you know, it's difficult to get up for a game, you know, a game every night or whenever they play. And you have to make sure in this league that you find ways to get yourself motivated, which was kind of in direct contrast to Zach Bogosian saying, you know, if you can't get motivated for these games, you know, what can you get motivated for? He's your captain. He played a great game yesterday. But I just thought that was odd comment from a team that I think lacks leadership. Now, I'm not calling out Andrew Ladd, but I think a team lacks leadership, and I think there's as much a problem with that as there is with the coaching. So then I guess leads me to a question. If you're not getting the leadership from the room, do you then have to drop in a big-time leader as a coach?
Patrick Waugh, what he's doing in Colorado,
something
for
like
example.
That. Even Tortorella, a leader, takes the spotlight away. Things like that. As opposed to more the Alain Vigneault, which is let your players be that role. I'll play the media, but I'll be good with the media.
Whether or not that's the case, the problem with doing it mid-season is I don't think that guy is currently available.
Well, I mean, it depends when you think of Hawerchuk and Havlund.
Well, but are Hawerchuk and Havlund...
But I agree. You want to have a coaching search that is... all-encompassing.
Yeah, I don't think Hawerchuk and Havlund are coming here in the middle of the year.
Oh, for sure they both are. Havlund's in the AHL, right? Coaching, I believe, for...
Rockford.
Rockford.
He's got to be let go from Rockford. I mean,
I'm sure he has an NHL out. And then Hawerchuk has an NHL out.
In the middle of the year? He's just not going to leave?
Why not? I don't... He's taking that shot any second.
Hawerchuk more so, but I mean, Havlund? Same division. I mean, isn't he's with Rockford as...
The rule is you go up.
I know you go up, but
no.
In the middle of the year, you don't think it would be a problem?
Doesn't matter. What Kirk Muller left, was it Milwaukee in the middle of the season to go to Carolina, didn't he?
That sounds familiar. Yeah. He definitely was in
Nationals
the AHL
farm
at
team
the
halfway through the year, and I think he got hired by Carolina.
Right.
And they'll let him go up anytime. Yeah.
John Cooper did it, but it was in the same organization. Mm-hmm. But I guess we'd have to check into the contract statuses. But I think getting back to Claude Noel and whether or not his job is on the line, I think... the whispers are getting louder and louder, and you're starting to hear it more and more, whether it's at the MTS Center or if it's in the media. And we're not just talking about the local media. We're talking about national media. We mentioned Darren Dreger was talking about it on TSN yesterday on the Insiders panel with Bob McKenzie and Pierre LeBrun.
It's all over, Izzy.
I think the biggest... Richie mentioned the lack of leadership. I've gone on the record, too, and said I don't think that's the problem as much as the lack of consistency and the lack of identity.
To me, that's leadership, though.
Yesterday, the Jets went shot for shot with the Washington Capitals and outplayed them. And I think we'd all agree that they probably should have got the 2 points.
They should have.
If it wasn't for Braden Holtby making 45 saves or whatever he made.
Yeah.
But this team on a night-in and night-out basis is not the same team. One team we see is a team that will hit everything that they see and they can score 5 goals a game. Another team that we see is a team that looks like they're not even engaged and not even into the game at all.
Well, they wanted to play... I mean, they obviously wanted to play more of the style that was demonstrated in the Washington game, last night's game, because that was the style that was demonstrated in the Edmonton game as well. More run and gun, more of a skating game, and
but they're playing
else.
Both teams that play that style.
I know.
So who's dictating the pace? That's always been another issue with the Jets, is who dictates the pace.
I'm saying tomorrow night in Nashville... It's going to be the same sort of game that it was on Sunday night against Nashville.
100%.
Where it's a rock fight, you know,
with Rinne in net.
Yeah, and it's a slugfest. And if the Jets try and play that open style game, it's just not going to work. I mean, I don't think that they can get Nashville off of their game.
First of all, I mean, Weber and Jones could play 60 minutes and not take a break and be better than Washington's defense.
Well, Washington, exactly. They're an atrocious defensive team.
That's awful.
So, I mean, the Jets try and play that way, and that's the way they want to play. Or at least the players want to play.
I don't know if that... Noel doesn't want to play that way.
I know
Noel
does.
Always want to play that way.
I know, and that's the problem, is that they haven't yet figured out how to sort of... If they can't play... It seems to me that the players, if they can't play the run-and-gun style that they want to play, their other alternative has just been not really to play at all.
Drew, I think one of the issues here is, what do we have here with this Jets team? And depending on who you ask, some people think the Jets are a playoff team this year, and some people don't think they are. I picked the Jets to make the playoffs. I believe everybody in this room didn't pick them to make the playoffs, and time will tell here. I think that what we have is a young core and a team that sometimes shows us that maybe they're on the cusp of becoming a better team. You look at the youth on this team, whether it's the really young guys, Jacob Trouba and Mark Scheifele, or really the core of the team with Ladd, Little, and Wheeler, that's still a pretty young core, and then you throw in Bogo and... Inconsistency is what we've seen here for 2.5 years, and that hasn't changed. We see
is it inconsistency or just not that good?
That's a fair point.
What teams are consistent?
I think that
that's why they're bad teams.
But if you look at it, 4 points out of the playoffs last year, so they didn't miss it by much. And
that
I know
was
that
an
because
awful division.
I know it was an awful. Hold on, I know it was an awful division. But what I see, at least, is a team that the highs are really high and the lows are really low. And I think that it's just not – I think a bad team would be just okay a lot of the time. But I think with the Jets, you see a team – the Nashville Predators, even though they make the playoffs, it seems like almost every year.
That's not a
very good team. And the Jets didn't even really give them a fight. And that's at home in the fifth game of a six-game homestand. And I think that this is a team that doesn't really – because they maybe haven't been in the playoffs, they maybe don't know how to – sustain a winning streak very long. Even though we've seen a few long-term winning streaks, this is a team that seems to be Jekyll and Hyde too much, and we've seen that for too long.
That's fair. See, I mean, they do have highs and lows. They're not just like Buffalo, just low all the time.
Sure.
I mean, if you drop Jacques Lemaire in here with the Magic, and he could probably get this team into the playoffs, that kind of thing, you know, just lock it down and just take the 2-1 game. But, you know, Mike Yeo's doing that in Minnesota. But Mike Yeo's got talent and speed. They're not scoring a lot of goals, but they're closing space quickly. And we'll see how good of a coach he is without Jonas Brodin, who got hurt. Mm-hmm. But, you know, those things, it's easy to say. Claude Noel, he talked about, I'd like to change all my players if he could. I don't blame him by the way they were playing. So do you have options? We talked about that, too. So it's not an easy solution.
And going back to how we started this conversation, I don't know that Mike Havlund or Dale Hawerchuk can come in here and if they replace Claude Noel, which is certainly a big if, I don't know that they can come in here, have the last 60 games of the season, and turn them around enough to make the playoffs.
Right.
And if they're not going to make the playoffs, I'd rather that the Jets give Claude Noel the entire year and do a fulsome coaching search in the offseason to see how the NHL shakes out.
True, and you're right. And if Kevin Cheveldayoff has that doubt in his mind, he most likely won't move Claude Noel. He's going to make this move only if he thinks bringing in someone else, whether it's Mike Havlund or Dale Hawerchuk, is better than what Claude Noel is giving the Jets right now. So I think you're right on that point.
Richard, you look like you want to say something quick.
Well, this is a funky music by Remus, but... the point there would be, my question would be, what don't you know about him 10 games into the season that you didn't know before?
Right. Like, I know everything there is to know about you, Richie, and Remus. We've hung out 5 days a week for the last 4 years. So, I mean...
Yeah, that's a problem in and of itself.
Yeah.
God help us.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is illegalcurve.com.
Oh, no, www.
I'm going to try and wean myself off the www.illegalcurve.com, even though it is really part of my DNA to say triple W there.
At this point in the show, should we give out Remus's BBM PIN number? Or
we'll save that for later on.
Okay.
Yeah. That's funny. I see. I didn't know where you're going with that. That was
funny because today Remus he tweeted about how stupid it is that everyone's excited about BBM coming out for the iPhone, and I agree.
I think it's stupid that Remus is tweeting about that being stupid.
Someone said that to me too, and I'm like, you know what? You know what? Whatever.
Okay, attaboy, Remus.
I don't need to get into it.
Daniel Alfredson playing against his former team, the Ottawa Senators, tonight. It's unfortunate that the first game isn't in Ottawa, so that'll take a little bit of the buzz away.
Yeah.
But, you know, so he plays the Ottawa Senators, a team he's obviously certainly familiar with. You know, do you think that time is going to heal whatever wound exists? And secondly, do you think there is a wound between the Daniel Alfredson camp and the Ottawa Senators camp?
I think there is a wound right now.
For sure.
But I absolutely think time will heal that wound. His number will be retired. Let's get that right out of the way first and foremost. And mm-hmm. This is not going to tarnish his legacy. Daniel Alfredson epitomizes the Ottawa Senators. And he's been there his entire career up until this year. We all know that. He made a decision along with his agent to go to the Detroit Red Wings, whether it was for more money or for a better opportunity to win the Stanley Cup. And I think there are fans, I don't want to speak for the fans in Ottawa, but I'm pretty sure that they were ticked off at the time, and they probably are ticked off. But when the Ottawa, I know we're jumping ahead to December 1st here, but I think in the first game in Ottawa, I'll be shocked if he doesn't get a standing ovation from those fans.
Do you think the fans are mad at Daniel Alfredson? Do you think the fans are mad at the Ottawa management for letting this situation get to this point?
Both. When we did that free agent show in July, I think July 5th, the calls in the team in Ottawa, or TSN now in Ottawa, both, you know, they went both ways. They went at Alfredson, they went at Eugene Melnyk. So I think probably over time, as you mentioned, you know, it'll heal all wounds. But tonight's game, I mean, I don't think the Detroit fans really care about Alfredson against Ottawa. So it's going to be more Alfredson against his former teammates tonight, and they'll play him as they play against any other team. They have to, you know, they have to be physical, especially against a team like Detroit that can skate. So I don't think the significance of tonight's game is that high. I do think the December 1st, as he mentions, that's different because it's the fan experience, the emotional experience for him. That's going to be hard for him. You know, you just saw Peyton Manning do it. You know, Daniel Alfredson's had a great career. He's not Peyton Manning in terms of his legacy.
But Richie,
in the sport.
He is the Peyton Manning to the Ottawa Senators.
To the Senators fans, yes. Yeah. Not to the sport itself, but to the Senators fans. And he was emotional at the beginning of the game and put up great numbers, but maybe not totally himself. It was an awkward encounter for him. And I think it'll be pretty similar for Daniel Alfredson when he goes back. I don't think tonight will be weird. December 1st will be
emotional
and emotional and all of those things.
What I think is getting lost in all of this is that Daniel Alfredson has been excellent
this
year.
That's what I was going to say.
He's a point a game.
Yeah.
He's sometimes playing on the top line, but mainly on the second line. He's really improved their power play. And the Ottawa Senators are struggling with their defense. I don't know if you guys saw that they signed, sent down Patrick Wierkoch to the AHL. And they're having problems there. They lost Sergei Gonchar. James Gordon was on Hustler and Lawless before we came on talking about that. And they have to worry about Daniel Alfredson, you know, hurting them on the score sheet more so than, you know, if his legacy is going to be tarnished. I just want to say one thing, and maybe you guys will disagree or agree with this. I think in Calgary and I think in Boston, I think if you asked anybody, I don't think people are still bitter about Jerome Iginla leaving or Ray Bourque deciding to leave to go to Colorado. I think that you have to respect that at that point in someone's career, they might want to go to another team to win a Stanley Cup. And really, at the end of the day, that was a business decision. And I don't think, you know, the only way his legacy would be tarnished is if somehow he left with a promise or in bad terms. And I guess it's bad terms in the sense that they thought that he was going to put his name on a contract. But I think at the end of the day, I really do believe it was about money.
Well, I do believe it was about money, too. I think to some extent that the Ottawa Senators tried to lowball him a little bit, thinking that he's never going to leave at this point in time.
Yeah, and you're going to hear so many different stories. One day we'll hear the truth, I'm sure, about what actually happened there. But
right, Richie, and they say that J.P. Barry didn't communicate to Brian Murray what was really going on. And that's, to me, that seems like a logical...
I'll tell you, if Daniel Alfredson had any problems with the way J.P. Barry conducted that the negotiation, J.P. Barry wouldn't be his agent anymore.
No, I'm not saying that Daniel Alfredson had a problem. I'm saying that Brian Murray had a problem with the way J.P. Barry was communicating.
That's between Brian Murray and that's Brian Murray's fault.
I don't think Brian Murray and Daniel Alfredson have any issues. I think Eugene Melnyk and Alfredson probably have issues. The other question to ask is, you know, they said they could have added Bobby Ryan and then still sign Alfredson, but based on the Eugene Melnyk financial troubles we've heard a lot about, I'm not so sure that actually would have happened.
I think that's a fair point. You're right. Can they? Could have they gotten both of them with the, for that price? And maybe the and you know what? Maybe the Senators went to Alfredson, like you said, and we don't know the truth. Maybe they said to him, "Look,
no, there was no communication."
Well, that's
the problem,
and that's the problem. There was no communication. It does, you know, in terms of Canadian, in terms of ownership, Eugene Melnyk's a bit of a wild card. It seems like
it is, and he is, you know, because he
cries poor a lot.
Well, I read articles about the fact that he probably is losing a lot of money. You know, his businesses have not succeeded as he thought that they would. He sold off his junior team. I mean, you know, I think there's proof there that he certainly is struggling a bit. But he also just says what he thinks and doesn't have a filter, which is going to
make great for us.
Great headlines, but yeah. It's off-putting for many people who work for him or with him.
Sure. I mean, I think he's still conducting a forensic investigation into Matt Cook slicing
you know,
Eric
Carlson's Achilles. That kind of stuff, right? He's very emotional, but he's got so much money that he's able to, you know, it's... A lot of guys like that, you know, these owners who have a lot of money just kind of go off and especially in sports are more apt to just be emotional and have a complete lack of discretion than they do in the regular business world.
I think George Steinbrenner just fired Billy Martin up in heaven. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290. When we come back, Columbus Blue Jackets general manager Jarmo Kekäläinen.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 6:30 in the afternoon, evening rather, you're listening to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Earlier this afternoon, about 90 minutes ago, Richard had the opportunity to sit down with the general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets, Jarmo Kekäläinen. Here is that interview conducted between Richard Pollock and Jarmo Kekäläinen.
We're joined live by Jarmo Kekäläinen, general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets. And Jarmo, you didn't really take the perceived, you know, course, the normal course to the National Hockey League general manager position. Can you talk about kind of the course you took and whether you think that course was beneficial to where you are today?
Well, I'm not sure what the normal course is. There's guys from so many different backgrounds, and I've held quite a few hats myself. I've been an agent, and I've been a general manager of a European team, and I've been director of amateur scouting, director of player personnel, and assistant GM in the NHL. But I guess the European background is a little bit different than anybody else. So, you know, it was a long road, but I guess everybody takes different roads to the position.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you obviously filled many different roles, and one of the roles, you started off with the Ottawa Senators in the mid-90s. What was your entry position with that team, and you know, how was your day-to-day work at that time?
Well, actually, Ray Shiro, who's the GM now with the Pittsburgh Penguins, he was the assistant GM with Ottawa Senators, and I was still playing in Sweden. My last year was 94-95, but I was injured most of the year, and Ray sort of knew that I was done for the year and asked me if I could do some scouting for him and watch some games in the Swedish Junior League. So that's how I got started, and I went to the Under-18 World European Championships that spring and saw some of the best draft-eligible players. And then the year after, I went basically full-time with them as a European scout. So that was my starting position, and you know, I was the only one covering Europe at the time, which now seems crazy, but yeah. That was a quick learning experience.
And when you worked in Ottawa, you were also, for a time, you were GM of IFK Helsinki, and you won a league championship in Finland. Would you be able to do both jobs today?
Well, I don't think they allow that anymore. That's the one thing. I think that for at the time it was great because I got to scout a lot of the different leagues in Europe and got to see some of the talent for both the team in Finland and the Ottawa Senators, and the main focus obviously being with the young kids for the draft. So it didn't interfere, or there wasn't much of a conflict of an interest there. So, but we also drafted some overage Europeans at the time, which was possible back then, and knowing the leagues in Finland and Sweden fairly thoroughly, I think helped me getting myself established in the NHL.
Do you think every team is you know, well prepared for obviously European scouting, or are some teams still more heavily involved than others?
It's a big area. It's like I don't think anybody in the NHL has one guy covering USA or two guys covering Canada, and Europe is, there's a lot of countries, and I've always believed that players coming from different areas, whether it's Quebec or Western Canada, although the language is the same in Western Canada as it is in Ontario, but in Europe you get Czechs, you get Russians, you get Swedes, you get Finns. They're all coming from different cultures, but also different languages. So in order to get to know them as not only hockey players, but as people and hockey teammates, you'd have to know the language and the culture too. And if you don't know the language, that's almost impossible.
That's interesting. And after your time in Ottawa and in Finland, you moved over to St. Louis. Jarmo, how did you get to St. Louis? And can you kind of talk about your time in the city?
I think my connection there was John Ferguson Jr., whose dad, Senior, was my first boss in Ottawa as the boss for the scouting staff.
Yeah.
And a good one he was, too. So John Ferguson Jr. worked as a part-time guy on the pro side when he was going to law school in Boston, and I got to know him working together a little bit in Ottawa in the meetings and stuff. And he was assistant GM with St. Louis when I left Ottawa and sort of was looking for something new, something of a fresh start somewhere else, and St. Louis contacted me and offered me a job.
You mentioned John Ferguson Sr., a name that's obviously has great prominence here in Winnipeg. Do you have any stories off the cuff here that you can tell us about John Ferguson Sr. that people would appreciate?
I have many, many stories. I don't know if I can tell them all on radio, but no. He was great. He had so much experience and knowledge and so many great stories from his career as a player, as a manager, all kinds of different things. So I was all ears every time we went out to eat, and he certainly enjoyed the good dinners and occasionally at that time a nice cigar after it too. So he was a character. There was always a lot of great stories. Like I said, I was all ears. I was a young guy just getting started, so I tried to soak it all in and learn as much as possible from him.
I was thinking about my dad's old stories with the John Ferguson and the Jets, and we're joined by Jarmo Kekäläinen of the Columbus Blue Jackets general manager. Jarmo, after St. Louis you went back to the Finnish Elite League with Jokerit. How much did you obviously were keeping an eye on the league, of course, through scouting and different measures, but how much did the Finnish Elite League change over the course of time for you being in the National Hockey League to returning there full-time?
I think every league evolves a little bit. There's development there, and I think the Finnish League had too, and there were certain things that I sort of had to learn over again, but hockey's hockey, I think, everywhere you go. I think the biggest reason for me was to get back in the saddle as being a manager and being able to get involved with all the day-to-day things that go with managing a team and being close to the team and its individuals. So, yes, it had gotten a little different, but I think it was still the same, and I think it was the right thing to do for me because I had really missed it, and I got right into the action again, which I love, and it's the closest thing that you can get to after you're done playing.
Of course, and you talk about managing. Managing in Finland, managing in the National Hockey League, what's the biggest difference?
Well, I think the biggest difference is just the rules that we have to play by in the NHL, the CBA. Everything is very clearly regulated here, whereas in Europe it's a little bit of a jungle.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's a free agent, and everybody's coaching everybody's players, and it's not only the Finnish team trying to lure your best players from you, but it's the Russian team in the KHL, it's the Swiss teams and the Swedish teams, and so you're balancing all that, trying to keep your best players, and then you have to go and tamper with the other teams yourself to try to lure the best talent from them. So it's a jungle out there, but it's interesting too, and hockey in Finland is as close to a religion as it is in Canada, and I think that's the greatest part about the Finnish league is that people love hockey. They rinks are full. It's number one sport by far.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I go to Canada, I admire the passion that people have for hockey, and I think we get pretty close to that in Finland. We're a little bit smaller country, but we're passionate about hockey.
That's great, of course. And the Olympics upcoming, we're going to see that heightened as usual overseas in Russia. You know, when you left Yokerit, you came obviously back to Columbus, where you are now. And John Davidson, somebody you work with in St. Louis, did you like formally apply for that position, Yarmo, or is that something that John Davidson calls you up and says, you know, I think that you'd be great for this position?
Well, I kept in touch with him over the years that I left from St. Louis. You know, it was just 3 years before that. And we'd worked together for 4 years. And we became friends when I was in St. Louis. So I had seen him. I visited North America a couple times. I was at the draft in Pittsburgh. I had seen St. Louis play in New York once when I ran the New York Marathon. I kept in touch, but he contacted me when the position became available and wanted to talk to me about it. And one thing led to another, and here I am.
And interesting, obviously, we talked a little bit about how you got to where you are and it's a very interesting background. Player evaluation is something that if you speak to people in the game, they say you're as good as anybody at evaluating a player and making a decision on a player. Is that something that's natural and obviously something you work with that, you know, comes over time, or you kind of have it and then you have to work with it?
Well, I often say that when I was a player, I tried to kind of observe everybody and learn from the players around me and wonder what made them so good and why they were so successful. I probably should have concentrated on playing more and I might have had a better career myself. But it taught me a lot too. You know, I really was intrigued by some of the players and how they became so good. And so the evaluation part was always sort of something that came natural to me, but also I had a really I was really fortunate to be able to work with some of the best evaluators in the game, and that became my mentors. You know, one that I always mention is Marshall Johnston,
right?
But I worked with Ray Shiro, I worked with Pierre Gauthier, I worked with Rick Dudley, who's a legend in player evaluation himself, but I think Marshall Johnston was the one that really taught me some of the basics that almost sound naive, that and you go to the game to watch the game, and you focus on it, and you watch it. You don't go there to have a hot dog and talk to all your friends. So he always sat in the corner, and he's very organized, very thorough, and just watched the game and evaluated players. And there's a simple truth to that it's hard work that gets you through the details and the repetition to get to know the player's character and heart and hockey sense and instincts, rather than just seeing the obvious of skills and skating and all that every scout can see who understands hockey even a little bit. So I've been fortunate. I've learned a lot from people that have been very successful in this.
That's fascinating. And the Columbus Blue Jackets right now has assembled. In the offseason, you guys brought in Bill Zito as a former agent to join your hockey operations department. Why did you seek out, or if you did, but if you did seek him out, why Bill Zito, and what did you think that he brought to the table that was maybe a little bit different than what you already had there?
Well, I think we share a lot of the same values. He got to when I got to know Bill in 1995, he had only East Coast Hockey League players as his clients. But he was extremely hardworking. He was passionate about hockey, and the more we talked about it, the more he understood, or more I understood how well he knew hockey. And he was the guy that would always find these guys like Brian Rafalski and Tim Thomas and those guys that nobody really believed in them because of their size or unorthodox style or whatever it was. And sure enough, a lot of those guys became very successful. And I think he's had a great eye on talent, but he also believes in hard work and success through that. And he's just a very good hockey man. And he's an honest, hardworking guy that became very successful in what he did in the agent business, but was really passionate about coming to this side and working in the management of a hockey team. That's what he really wanted to do. A lot of people probably told him that he's crazy doing that because of the business that he had built and the money that he was probably making. But this is what he wanted to do, and I respect people that have that kind of passion for what they want to do.
And you guys in Columbus, John Davidson, yourself, Chris McFarland, and Bill Zito are all working towards obviously making Columbus a contender. You go into that situation, Yarmo, and it's a team that's obviously been struggling for many years to get to the playoffs, you know, against Detroit years back. And before you get there, there's kind of a different outlook on the team, and you've changed that, obviously. But how do you balance – obviously your plan of trying to build a winner with the fan base's desire to win now?
Well, I think that we always have to keep in mind that the sustained success, the concept that we've been talking about here is built on drafting and developing a core that is strong, really strong. And at the same time, you know, you want to respect the people around the organization, the fans, the integrity of the whole team, the organization that works for success. So we want to win now. There's no question about it. Well, we're not going to sacrifice the future for trying to win now. So we're building for long term, but absolutely, we're going for the playoffs every year, and we're going to do everything we can to get there. And one of the things that we're trying to do is build a strong culture of winning here, where it's based on hard work on and off the ice. We take everything about preparation very seriously, whether it's about nutrition, off-ice training, rest, efficient travel, getting used to the time change, whatever it is, we're going to try to turn every stone to try to be successful, very prepared, build the confidence of the organization through success, and little by little, it's gonna get on the level where it's going to last, and we're going to have that strong core moving forward.
And final question for you. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, Jarmo. You mentioned agents, you mentioned honesty, you've talked about your time in Finland and Sweden. I'm guessing, I don't know for sure, I'm guessing you had some form of a relationship with Winnipeg's Don Baisley, who recently passed away. And if you did, can you speak about him, your relationship with him, and him as a person?
I think Don was the greatest example that I've met in hockey business for the great values or strong values, the integrity and the respect that he showed everybody, the time that he spent with his clients to improve them, not only as hockey players but as human beings too. Don was never my agent, but I have a lot of really good friends who had him as an agent and mentor and a friend, and I got to know Don through negotiating with him for players that he represented to play over in Europe, in Helsinki, and through many other conversations that I had with him over the years. And he was a great professional, but he was a lot better human being, and I just hope that I can live up to some of the examples that he set for anybody in this business.
Well, you're certainly well on your way, Jarmo. Thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it very much, and good luck the remainder of the season.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. A big congratulations to my colleague Richard Pollock, and a big thank you to Jarmo Kekalainen for that fabulous interview. In case you missed any of it, it will be available for download both on TSN1290.ca and on our website IllegalCurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, and Facebook.com/IllegalCurve is our website page. Gentlemen, some news and notes from around the NHL this week. Injuries, suspensions. You know, it's a good thing we're on twice a week, because if we were only on once a week, we'd have to spend that entire show dedicated to injuries and suspensions in the NHL.
That's true.
Let's start with Dallas Stars forward and Manitoba native Ryan Garbutt. He gets 5 games for his hit on Dustin Penner. That's about as bad as we've seen this year, I got to tell you.
That was a Manitoba-on-Manitoba hit. Yeah, that was dirty. We were talking about it about an hour ago. He leaves his feet, and it was a charge. What? And he comes across the middle of the ice, and Dustin Penner was motionless on the ice, and it looks like he'll be okay. But he gets 5 games, Drew. He's not a repeat offender. But again, if they really want to take out the hits to the head, I think you got to go more than that. You got to go 10 games. You got to go 15 games. You can make an argument that if you really want to penalize the guy, 5 games, that's a week and a half. And I'm going to continue to say it. I love physical hockey. I love seeing a good scrap once in a while. But these cheap shots don't need to happen. Ryan Garbutt doesn't need to do that. He just doesn't need to do it.
Yeah. It wasn't even a charge. It was almost like a supercharge. Yeah. He just took a beeline straight at Penner's head.
Out of the box.
Out of the penalty box. He just took a run at him. I mean, you see him coming if you watch like the full
doesn't
video.
Doesn't look at the play. Doesn't look at the puck, excuse me. Just squares him up to hit him, and Penner had his head down. But exactly right, Drew. If you look at that play, I talk about this all the time. He just even looking to play the puck, he comes out of the box, and he takes this huge run, jumps, and leaves his feet, hits him in the jaw. Did you see Penner on the ice? He was jello.
Yeah. He was out cold. I mean, it's one thing to, incidental contact that might be a headshot.
No, this was not a deliberate hit. That was just garbage play as far as I'm concerned. It was dirty, and you can't play that way in the National Hockey League. And I agree that he should be suspended for more than 5 games. In fact, he's not a repeat offender. It works in his favor, but I don't know if it works in the overall safety of the game's favor.
No. And Ryan Garbutt is a guy, you mentioned he's from Manitoba, he's a guy that drops the gloves. He's a physical player. That's what he needs to do. But as we just mentioned, this has nothing to do with the play, has nothing to do, there's no impact on the game with this. And these things need to be taken out of the game. I think that these things need to be taken out of the game before fighting needs to be removed from the game, because these are much more dangerous. We saw the incident with Nicholas Cronwall. I know you want to get into that. That was also very dangerous. Even though he turns, it was still a very dangerous hit.
I agree. Moving to the injury front, Edmonton Oilers forward Taylor Hall out 4 weeks with a knee injury. He got tangled up in the Sens-Oilers game from Saturday afternoon. I remember when he left the game while we were on air on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Turns out it's 4 weeks for Taylor Hall.
Yeah.
Injury prone at this point? Is it too early to say it?
Yeah, he's kind of always been injury prone, Drew. They drafted him knowing that he kind of plays a reckless style, and it was certainly not averse to injury. So.
Okay, but Richie, we got to mention, though, Eric Greiba, who coincidentally enough just scored for the Ottawa Senators. They're up 1-0 on Detroit early there in the first period. But he sticks his knee out. And Taylor Hall,
2-0 now.
2-0 Edmonton, or 2-0 for.
But as I mean, Don Cherry talked about it on Saturday. The knee was out, and it was kind of principal point of contact almost, but that wasn't really like kneeing.
I thought
it was kind of incidental.
I looked at it from a few angles.
Yeah, so
and originally, I thought it was incidental, but if you look at how he's following through, and he's not going to connect with Taylor Hall, typical like a shoulder to shoulder hit, and then his knee comes out, and Taylor Hall is injury prone, and it's really unfortunate because Taylor Hall has been playing really well, and we got to remember this guy's. He's got a good chance at making Team Canada for the Olympics. And this really hurts his chances because not only is he just not on the ice, Stevie Yzerman and Kenny Holland can't watch him play. But
does it affect his play later on if it's not rehabbed enough?
And the thing is, Taylor Hall has been, over the last couple seasons, has been hands down the best player for the Oilers. It's really unfortunate, guys, that he's injured again. But there doesn't look like there's going to be a suspension on this one. But you could argue that there was a knee that came out there.
Even Greiba last year against Montreal. I mean, you could argue that was just a crazy hard hit, and he's built like a truck.
You're talking about the hit on
Eller.
On Lars Eller.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, I didn't have an issue with the Greiba one. It was kind of a freak play, knee-on-knee thing, but it wasn't a direct knee. It wasn't like a knee-on-knee back like the Ulf Samuelsson days.
One last one before we go to break. Yeah. Minnesota Wild defenseman Jonas Brodin out indefinitely with a broken cheekbone.
Yeah, a huge loss. They don't have great depth. They have a lot of defensemen who play. They don't have great defensemen aside from Suter and Brodin. And there's going to be guys who need to step up there, and I'm not sure they can. It's going to be more of a collective effort.
Yeah, they've said that Jared Spurgeon is going to play with Ryan Suter, and then Nate Prosser is a guy that will be the bottom pairing with Clayton Stoner. So Jonas Brodin, the timing is terrible because the Minnesota Wild are in a dogfight to make the playoffs in that Western Conference, and it's unfortunate because he plays 20 and a half minutes with Suter there. So hopefully he's only out for a couple of weeks, and if he's out for longer than that, then that's going to be trouble for the Wild.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. When we return, 6 things we learned this week on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. This is The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 1 hour to go. This is NHL Midweek with The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Michael Remus gets us on and off the air. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
I'll start with Richard Pollock this week, and it has to do with the Washington Capitals, the team that was in Winnipeg last night to face the Jets. Richard, in your opinion, the Washington Capitals are at a crossroads in terms of their style of play vis-a-vis their personnel.
You know, Drew, this is a team that likes to play an up-tempo game, and they try and tailor their game to Ovechkin and Backstrom and Johansson and Grabowski. You can go on and on. I mean, you go through the shootout lineup last night. Their talent is endless almost. But they play a style where they're activating their defense. First off, I'm not sure the defense ought to be activated based on who they are. And I think more importantly, if you noticed last night in other games that they've played, they're activating their defense but don't have forwards who have a commitment to defense. So it's just like odd man rush city. The reason they have a terrible record right now, because I just don't think that the way that they're playing is really the right way to succeed in this day and age, at least based on who they have on their roster. Their defense are not good enough one-on-one to be left on the islands that they are, and their forwards are not willing to back-check or play defensively enough to have the defenseman that active. There's other factors, there's other issues there as well, but those are a couple of them. And the Washington Capitals need to, I mean, this is their identity, and it's been for some time, but it's not working.
Ezra Ginsberg, Cam Atkinson is quietly emerging as a top offensive player for the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah, Cam Atkinson got a goal the other night, and he's not tearing it up as of late, but Cam Atkinson is a guy that snuck into the top six of the Columbus Blue Jackets, and we should mention that one of the reasons why he snuck into the top six is because Nathan Horton's injured, but he's a guy who's still very young, 24 years old, was I believe he was a Hobie Baker Award finalist with Miami, Ohio. I think maybe we'll check that, but Cam Atkinson is a guy that's got lots of speed, and he's a small guy.
He's a small guy.
And if you've listened to the show before, you know that I have a soft spot for the small guys, the Brendan Gallaghers, the Chris Kunitzes, the Brian Giontas, and this guy has been really good. Scored a nice backhanded goal last night.
He did, yeah.
But he's quietly becoming a dependable guy for the Columbus Blue Jackets. And guys, we talked, it's a nice tie-in with Jarmo Kekalainen, but let's be honest here, especially with Nate Horton out of the lineup, aside from Gabrick and a few other guys, you know, Brandon Dubinsky being one of them, they don't have a lot of scores on that team. And Cam Atkinson is a guy that he's becoming a go-to guy for that team.
Boston College.
Four.
Richard Pollock, players like TJ Gagliardi, Shane O'Brien, and Chris Russell are proving that assembling a bottom-feeding team with players attempting to secure spots as NHL regulars is an interesting rebuilding experiment.
Bob Hartley's got them playing well. But
talking about the Calgary Flames, first
Calgary
of all.
Flames. Bob Hartley has them playing well, but what I think people need to understand is that these guys are also playing for jobs, not only with Calgary, but for the future. You know, Chris Russell and Alberta Boy. Shane O'Brien's kind of been all over Vancouver, Nashville,
the Roxy.
Exactly.
The Roxy.
Yeah, so you beat me to
TJ
that
Gagliardi
one.
Too, you know, San Jose and Colorado, etc. But the idea is these guys are there and you watch them play and they're working hard. They're, you know, you talk about the Jets in terms of issues with, you watch the Jets sometimes, you're wondering where the work ethic is. You watch Calgary and maybe it's because these guys don't know if they're going to get another NHL contract. Maybe that's why they're working harder, but they're working harder because they're less talented than the team that's in this city. And a guy like Gagliardi, you know, they get tossed around, but you watch them skating hard, making plays, and looking pretty good. And maybe it's because, you know, this team is clearly rebuilding, but maybe the fact that they're rebuilding and the fact that the players on their team know that they're they can be easily disposed of.
They're playing for
another contract and putting a bunch of those guys together. Make them kind of difficult to play against.
Another thing to note, Bob Hartley makes every player do 100 push-ups before every practice. He's a really big fitness guy.
Not actually true, though.
No.
Okay, Remus actually did 100 push-ups before the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he was sleeping. But
dream push-ups.
It was like when he slept, he pushed himself up to wake up.
That's right. Ezra Ginsberg, the New York Islanders are going to have to improve at the goaltending position if they are going to take a step forward as a franchise and go deep in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
See, if Richie's already agreeing before
you've said anything,
I know one of my things this week is a good one. If you look at Evgeny Nabokov yesterday, let in 5 goals against the Vancouver Canucks. 4 of them, I would say, were poor. with maybe the exception of the Ryan Kesler goal. But he hasn't been good this year, and he's got a losing record. The Islanders have started off slow here, but Evgeny Nabokov, I don't think you can depend on playing 60 or 65 games a year. And I think right now he's costing them, because if you look at the way Tavares, Molson, and Okposo are playing, that line is arguably a top five line in the NHL right now.
Franz Nielsen
is playing very good. Grabner, even though he's suspended, is very good. I mean, this is Travis Hamonic from Manitoba. This is a really good team. And even though Evgeny Nabokov over his career has been a great goaltender, he's starting to fade off and he's really hurting them. And I think that's something that Garth Snow is going to have to address sooner rather than later.
He's a small goalie and he's not as quick as he used to be. That's a bad combination.
Is that a landing spot for Brizgalov?
I'm not sure. With that locker room, a really tight-knit group that's been playing together for a long time, I wouldn't bring Brizgalov.
Maybe they'll offer him a 15-year contract.
Richard Pollock, Alex Goligoski has simply never turned into the defenseman many thought he would years ago in Pittsburgh.
Puck-moving guy, started off quite well in Pittsburgh.
Traded for James Neal.
That's right. Good skater. You want to know where he practiced today? According to the Dallas Morning News, you want to know where he was lined up today?
Forward.
That's never good. because Brent Burns had the pedigree of playing in the forward in the OHL before and having been coached by this current coach, Todd McClellan, as a forward, I believe in Houston of the AHL. But Alex Goligoski, first of all, is an undersized defenseman, so be undersized forward. Does he have the immense skill to be able to make an effect on the game? Maybe more of an effect on the game at forward than defense, but not as big of an effect overall as he ought to have. You know, and he's poor defensively. You know, he hasn't used his speed and offensive ability enough to make his poor defensive play not as much of an issue. And he's had ample opportunity, different coaches. He's played big minutes. Dallas defense hasn't been that strong over the past few years. He's part of that, but that also presents a lot of opportunity. So you look back at that trade and, you know, it's...
Was that Nieuwendyk who made that deal?
That was Nieuwendyk, and, you know, they had a luxury, I think they thought at least at the time, luxury of forwards. Mm-hmm. And they needed somebody on the back end, which was true at the time.
They threw in Matt Niskanen also, didn't they?
Yeah, Matt Niskanen also. I mean, he's on difference maker, but yeah, you know, another guy. Matt Niskanen probably... is more reliable overall than as a defenseman over the past couple of years than has been Goligoski, which is not, considering the fact that James Neal is a 30-plus goal scorer, mm-hmm. flanking Evgeny Malkin when he's healthy, obviously not right now.
And an Olympian.
Yeah, very well could be an Olympian.
Yeah.
That trade has turned out to be a coup for Ray Shiro and probably partly why Joe Nieuwendyk is currently not in the general manager spot in Dallas. One.
Ezra Ginsberg to wrap up six things that we learned this week. Better special teams and better goaltending, and not just offense, are key factors contributing to the Colorado Avalanche's terrific start to the 2013-14 regular season.
It's unbelievable. Everybody knows how good Nathan MacKinnon's been, the 2013 mm-hmm. first overall pick. Everybody's seen all of the offensive talent they've got. Steve Downey's doing well. Gabriel Landeskog's doing better. Even Paul Stastny's starting to come around a little bit. But their defense is unbelievable. They have allowed the second fewest goals in the NHL, the Colorado Avalanche. If you look at last year, they were at the bottom. And it's interesting. I started going through the numbers, and you look at the penalty kill, and you look at the power play, both top 10 in the NHL. I think their penalty kill is number one in the NHL right now. Maybe we'll check that, but it was yesterday. Okay. Their special teams were both in the bottom 10 last year, and that's contributing in a big way because, you know, this team needs to keep the puck out of the net. And not only has Varlamov been very good, he got first star of the week a couple mm-hmm. weeks back. J.S. Jaguar got the win last night, or was that two nights ago? And their goaltending has been improved. And I think Adam Foote, who was brought back as a defensive consultant, not an assistant coach, but as a defensive consultant, that's helping them out. Because if you look at their defense, it's not exactly, you know, the biggest name defense.
No,
you know,
no.
You've got Eric Johnson there, but you've also got guys like Andre Benoit, Nate Genin, Corey Sarich. I mean, these guys are getting the job done.
It's a bad defense.
Second in the NHL so far in goals against. I know it's early,
yeah,
and but they have tightened up defensively. Patrick Waugh's had a hand in that. So I think
it's been a lot of a five-man unit, Ezzy. But, you know,
yep.
Jagr stopping pucks at a 98% rate and Varlamov at a 95% rate.
Yep.
I mean, they're not going to obviously continue to play that well, but your point's well taken in terms of the way the team has obviously played, regardless of whether or not they're going to eventually come back down to earth, which they are. We know that they are. But they're playing a better team defense. Last year, you watched that team. It was a bit of a... It was a fire drill out there.
Yeah. The Colorado Avalanche lead the NHL with a penalty kill percentage of 90.3%.
And it gives you the, you know, and it speaks to Ezzy's point about the defense and goaltending. Who's your best penalty killer?
Absolutely.
Your goaltender.
Yep. Exactly right. And there's eighth in power play percentage at 21%.
Right, and if you look last year, they were at the bottom. And as most bad teams are at the bottom of the special teams battle, and again, Richie mentioned it, it is early. But early on, they've been one of the better teams in the West.
And they can score. Like, we know they can score. Yeah, and they can come at you in different ways. Speed especially. And some size too. So watch out if Patrick Watt keeps them going on this. Even if they come back down to earth, they're padding their stats right now, right? They're getting ahead of teams like Winnipeg and Dallas and all those teams.
They're giving themselves a buffer, something that the Jets don't have for the rest of the year now. That's it for the six things we learned this week, because that's all we learned. That's it. Six things max each week.
Yeah,
other than that, we're just, you know, poking berries up our noses in a ditch in our spare time. Let's go to break. When we
the
come back, Michael
mean?
Michael Tra- it's a Simpsons reference. Michael Trakos from the National Post is going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Back to the 70s, eh, Remus?
Didn't take him long to give up on the modern music. Quarter after 7 here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. This is NHL Midweek. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, the man in the lavender shirt, Richard Pollock. Ezra Ginsberg not wearing a shirt whatsoever. That's just odd.
You like that tie-in? Lavender? Hockey fights cancer?
I did. I was,
right?
I was
Evander Kane wearing the pink jersey.
Pink suit
yesterday.
Yeah, lavender suit. It was a nice suit.
Nice tie-in.
Yeah, let's go to the Hockey Show hotline.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
Transferring a call.
We welcome back to NHL Midweek. From the National Post, he covers the Toronto Maple Leafs, Michael Trakos. Michael, good evening. How are you, friend?
Good thing. Good boys. How you doing? Did I hear the correct Ezra's without a shirt here?
You see, it's almost believable, isn't it?
Yeah, hopefully you guys aren't doing what we do here in Toronto, where all the radio stations now, the sports talk shows, are also simulcast on TV. We're not suggesting the viewers. Nothing against Ezra, though. I just don't want to see any dude with his shirt off.
It's a Sopranos-like blackout here when that happens.
No offense taken, Michael. It was actually included in our contract. There would be no chance that we were ever televised, so...
How are you guys doing tonight, man?
We're doing good. Want to get you on?
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Talk a little bit. You know, we don't see you guys as often now that you're in the East and we're in the West.
I know, it's so far away now. I feel bad for you guys. Don't you guys wish you were in the Metropolitan Division?
Oh God,
I think
the Marlies may make the playoffs in that division.
I was gonna say, if you guys are in the Metropolitan Division, what are you in first by like 10 points or something?
Not too far off. And also, I mean, when you think of metropolitan cities, Winnipeg is just at the forefront of your list, of course.
Oh, of course. And then same with the Atlantic Division, right? Like, it's such wacky names.
It's so weird.
They really should have, if they had any sense of humor in the NHL office, they would have gone with the Floorth East. That would have made the most sense.
Oh yeah, I wanted the Snowbird Division for what Toronto's in, because you got Florida and you got Tampa, and it's like, Montreal, Boston, every other city there. It's just the Snowbirds are heading down there.
Yeah, well, the NHL is not known for their creativity or their senses of humor, I suspect.
Not intentionally. At least that's for
sure. Yeah, the unintentional humor is more of a problem, but that's for another day and time, I guess. Michael, obviously, want to talk about the Leafs with you. David Clarkson. Yeah, you know, he's had a little bit of an extended preseason thanks to his eagerness to jump off the bench and join into a fight. How do you see the Leafs using him when he comes back to play his first game later on this week?
Yeah, that's a good question, because, you know, they're kind of rolling. The record at least would tell us that. But we all know, or anyone who's watched the Toronto Maple Leafs know, that they're kind of doing it by smoke and mirrors right now. So I think they actually do really need David Clarkson, and they need him for two reasons. One, he's a really good player, and he's going to help them out just by being a really good player. He's going to fit into the top two lines. And the second reason is he's really physical. And the one thing that's kind of missing, and the Leafs, as you know from last season, they led the league in hits, they led the league in block shots, and they obviously led the league in fights. And this year we've lost, or the Leafs have lost that grit and then that kind of aspect of the game. So Clarkson's going to be a much needed boost, granted if he can kind of keep it within the boundaries. And I think that's probably going to be the challenge, is because obviously he was a little over eager jumping over the bench there and getting the 10-game suspension to join into the fray. And so really, if he can play within those boundaries, it could be a huge bonus for them, because it's not like they're like, the record tells you that they're not desperately needing him to be a savior, but in the same respect, they do need him to join the lineup as soon as possible.
Lots to talk about David Clarkson, Michael. Also, lots to talk, of course, about Morgan Riley. He's played 8 games thus far and played last game with Cody Franzen and playing well with Cody Franzen. 10 game marks coming up. What do you think they do?
Oh, I think he's playing coy, saying he hasn't been told and he doesn't know what's going on, but for sure he's staying. And the same, it's almost the same situation that Sean Monahan was in, where it's just like, come on, look at this guy. He obviously is cutting or is playing well in the NHL. To send him back just wouldn't make any sense. And granted, Monahan's on a team that has low expectations, so maybe you can live with his mistakes more than you can with Riley's, but to be honest, he hasn't made a whole lot of mistakes. You can point your finger at a lot of other defensemen more than you can Morgan Riley, and he's been fun to watch. I know he got compared to Erik Karlsson, Chris Letang, and then that's probably because he's a puck-moving guy, but you can see flashes of it, because he jumps up into the rush just like in the blink of an eye, and he's already back on the defensive end. He's that good of a skater. So, yeah, he'll stick, granted, unless he gets injured, or even if he has a dog of a game, he's going to stick in there. They just need him.
Michael, from one defenseman to another, we heard a lot of trade talks involving Jake Gardner, but he started to play well. I think you'd probably agree with that. Are those trade talks starting to die down a little bit? What's the latest with Jake Gardner's status?
Yeah, I never understood the trade talks, just because if you're going to point to an area that this team is deficient in, it's defensemen. So to trade Jake Gardner, you're going, okay, so what defenseman are they going to get back? And it just didn't seem like you were going to get value for Jake at this point in his career, especially if he hasn't been playing up to his potential. So I'd say they've died down, and that's probably, like you said, as a result of him picking up his play. But I never saw the whole basis for that. Like, I understand Edmonton, there's trade talk that they need a goaltender, because Edmonton's goaltending has been terrible. maybe the last couple of games it's been a little better, but with the Leafs, they need more defensemen. So if you're going to trade anyone, I would almost expect it to be a forward in the rumor mill right now.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Michael Trakos from the National Post talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Michael, sticking with the defense, one of the sort of the feel-good stories of the NHL offseason was Paul Ranger coming back to play in the NHL after being away for a year or a little bit more than a year. How would you rate his play on the Maple Leafs back end so far this season?
Meh.
So the story was more feel good than the play has been.
You know what? I'm not gonna isolate Paul Ranger, because I actually think he's been like every other defenseman that they've had, where it's been a bit up, it's been a bit down, it's been a bit ugly, it's been a bit weird. And yeah, he's been playing with Jake Gardner, and at times you think, okay, well, they're turning the corner, they're finally getting some chemistry, and then they have a bad shift. So I'm not ready to write him off. I think he does a lot of things that can be good. He's great in terms of in the defensive zone, where he's in the corner trying to win a puck battle. He's really good at that. And last night he jumped into the rush, and that's something that you don't see from every defenseman on the team here. So, but it's a learning curve, it seems like. You can tell he's been out of the league for, 4 years almost.
Yeah.
So I didn't expect him to kind of jump in and be that top four defenseman right away, even though Leafs said they had the potential to be. So I almost put him in the same category as a Jake Gardner or Morgan Riley, where there's going to be ups, there's going to be downs, and he's going to have to find his feet.
You know, Michael, there was a lot of talk kind of after Phil Kessel signed his contract, which we'll talk about in a second, you know, about Dion Phaneuf, what's going to happen with him. And then, of course, Gardner rumors kind of come up, and then what's going to happen with Morgan Riley kind of take over for the time being. But Dion Phaneuf's contract expires at the end of the year. He's a UFA. He's making $6.5 million this year. How do you see those negotiations going? Do you see it dragging out throughout the course of the season and even into the offseason? Or do they need, or that's another question, I think, do they need to lock him down before then?
You know, I think they're really going to wait until as late as possible to make a decision. And I think the reason is they have to see what they have in the other defense. And if Jake Gardner and Cody Franzen over the course of the year can kind of take that step and show that they can handle more and more minutes, maybe Dion Phaneuf becomes a bit more expendable. Mm-hmm. If you're going to have to make the decision right now, you have to sign him because he's their guy that's playing the bulk of the minutes and he has been their best defenseman, warts and all. So the problem right now is if you don't have Dion Phaneuf in the lineup, who do you have?
Right.
So if you don't sign him or re-sign him this year, who do you get in free agency? Do you get two guys to try to take his spot? Because there's not really that 1A defenseman, and I don't think Dion's even a 1A defenseman. Right. So free agency is tough, and right now you've got a lot of young bodies that could grow into that role, but right now you're just not seeing it.
And, I mean, it just takes one team, right? Michael, like, I assume, I don't know, I'm not going to assume, but I'm of the belief that Dion Phaneuf, one team will need a defenseman bad enough to at least eat up 20 to 25 minutes that'll give him enough money that'll make it worth his while. Do you agree with that?
Oh yeah, for sure. He's going to get his money. And I think if he comes back to Toronto, it might be a scenario where he leaves money on the table, but he gets an extra year because re-signing, you can give the player that extra year versus going to another team, the same way that Phil Kessel got the 8-year deal versus 7. So I think it'll be a scenario like that. And if I'm a betting man, I think they do bring him back. And I think he comes back for either what he's making now or maybe just a shade less. And like I said, he gets a term over that. And you know what? I wouldn't be totally against that. I just wonder where they're going to find the money to re-sign everyone because Cody Franson's a free agent and Paul Ranger's a free agent. Jake Gardner's a free agent. Like, there's a lot of guys coming up this summer. Nikolai Kuhlman. I think even James Reimer is a free agent. So, like, it's going to be a real, real difficult summer for Dave Nonis to kind of figure out how he's going to keep all these guys. And they might be in a situation, and Dave Bolin's a free agent, like, where guys, you lose a couple guys because you have to bring back what you deem as the core.
Michael, you just mentioned David Bolin, and we wanted to ask you about Dave Bolin because he was a big acquisition for the Toronto Maple Leafs, as was David Clarkson. And in Toronto, they're just raving about him, and you're around the team on a daily basis. How have you seen him changing the culture of the Leafs, you know, as a guy who's won a couple of Stanley Cups?
Yeah, I love Dave Bolin. Like, in terms of how he plays and how he's used on the ice, he's made a lot of these advanced stats guys, and I'm somewhere in the middle on the advanced stats, but they were in love with Mikhail Grabowski, and they seem to that was the talking point this summer after they bought him out, and you don't hear Mikhail Grabowski's name at all anymore because Dave Bolin has been so good in that role as that third-line center who can jump up and be a second-line center if need be and match up against the other team's top line, and he seems to be noticeable, or he is noticeable on almost every game, almost every shift, so he's provided offense. He's been great on the defensive end. And it, like you said, the culture of the team, I just see is he and Nick Kuhlman, and Nick Kuhlman's injured right now, but they're their two best, I think, defensive two-way forwards. Mm-hmm. So he's been great in that role.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Michael Trakos. He covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for the National Post.
If only he covered the National Post for the Toronto Maple
Leafs. That's what I was going to say.
That'd be interesting. You know, you mentioned Phil Kessel earlier. He's obviously signed the big deal, $8 million per year for the 8-year term. In and around when he signed the contract, people were kind of, there was rumblings that, you know, he's a little bit more competitive. He's a little bit, he's not as, maybe not shy is the word, but he wants it more. He's a little bit more of a leader. Do you buy into that whole change in Phil Kessel, or is he just the same player producing at this fairly same level, if not a little bit better?
Well, a change happened last year with Randy Carlyle when he came in, and he demanded more of Kessel, and not so much that he'd be a leader in the room or whatnot, just that when he was on the ice, he was first on the forecheck, and if the puck was in his area in the defensive end, and that he went and got it. So I think we saw just more growth from him as a 2A or as like a 100-foot player, as they call it. And so I think that changes, and that's stuck with him right now. And I think he realizes that obviously he's the most talented player on this team. And there was no doubt of his offensive skills. What's happened now is just become more of an all-around player. And he's never going to be Jonathan Toews or contending for the Selke, but he's a guy who's responsible, at least in his own end. And last night, you looked and he's got numbers in his hits column. And before, that was always a zero. So he's made steps towards being that more complete player. So if that's leadership, then yeah, he's taken on a more leadership role.
I believe we're contractually obligated to ask you about the Toronto Maple Leafs goaltending situation anytime you interview a Leafs writer.
Right.
So, you know, here's that question. Do you expect the Leafs to name a number one goalie, or is it going to just be the competition all season long, barring, you know, everybody being healthy?
Yeah, I don't think there's a real need. And that being said, I don't see James Reimer finishing the season with the Leafs.
Oh, really?
No, I just when we're talking about salary and how this team is up against the cap, and I think as you get closer to the trade deadline, I think this team is going to either pick up an extra center or a defenseman, and the way to do that is to shed some salary, and the one chip you've got probably is James Reimer. So I think more and more Jonathan Bernier is going to be the number one goalie, and you're seeing it right now. He's getting more starts. When he's in net, the players keep saying that they just feel like a calmness back there because the rebounds just don't pop out. He's great with handling the puck, and it seems like the guys are really kind of, I don't want to say playing for them, but when he's in net, you're seeing a different type of game from the Leafs defensively. So, yeah, I think as the season goes on, I don't know when it's going to be, if it's going to be right at the trade deadline or if we're going to see it with all the need that Edmonton and some other teams might have for goaltending. We might see it even in early January.
Michael, we've got one last question here before you leave, and it's a bit of a serious one. Tyler Bozak has picked We Can't Stop by Miley Cyrus as the team's post-game victory song. Now, the question that we have for you is, do you like the victory song, or do you think that the Leafs and Tyler Bozak should pick a different Miley Cyrus song?
A different Miley Cyrus song. Party in the USA, maybe. you know what? I was like, of all the songs to pick, here you are, you're a polarizing team. Maybe it's appropriate that you've got Miley Cyrus as your person singing the post-game celebration song, because how polarizing of a pop star she is. So I asked the players. The best answer I received was Colton Orr likes the song. So if Colton Orr, your enforcer, likes the song,
Winnipeg boy,
go tell him to pick a new one. So
what's funny, Michael?
Good luck with that one, boy.
It's funny because he's a wrecking ball.
Oh, don't even start that.
You script that?
No, I mean, no. Actually, yeah, Michael and I talked earlier this afternoon.
Michael Trakos from the National Post, we appreciate it. You're willing to come on with us goofs, so we really appreciate it.
All right, maybe I'll take off my shirt next time I'm on.
Then you'll be one of the crew.
All right.
Thanks, Michael.
It was a pleasure, boys.
Take care, bud. Bye. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. It's time, party. We can love who we want.
We can kiss who we want. We can see who we want. You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. It's our party, we can do what we want. It's our party, we can say what we want.
It's our party, we can love who we want. We can kiss who we want. Remus iPod.
Anybody want to sing? Red cousin, sweaty bodies everywhere. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN.
This song on the radio, like, I haven't heard the song.
It's Miley Cyrus. It's the Toronto Maple Leaf spirit animal.
I know what it is, but what's the chorus going to be like? Remus, I got to hear the chorus.
We can't stand.
Well, no, I don't want to hear you singing the chorus.
Well, it froze. The computer froze.
Oh,
so
that's why.
So you got to deal with me now.
It's not an auto-tune?
It's awful.
Reem, when are you going to do like a remix?
I'm a big fan of the song.
This is their game. Yeah. This is a song they play when they win?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you like the words? La da dee da dee. We like to party. Dancing with Miley.
I'm with Remus. This is a great song. I think Miley Cyrus.
She doesn't get the credit she deserves.
She doesn't get
lyricist.
Enough credit. She's probably my favorite recording artist right now.
La dee da, dee da.
She's great.
Oh, that's funny stuff. What are we talking about right now? We're talking about Lars Eller. Lars Eller. He's causing a stir. Causing a ruckus.
A doings is a transpirant.
A doings. Prior to the game yesterday in Montreal, Lars Eller was asked about the Edmonton Oilers' style of play. His comments were, "It can be anything, you know. They play a little bit like a junior team, I think, sometimes. They take a lot of risks, a lot of chances. They're a little all over the place. There's not a lot of structure always in their game. It can really be anything. You don't know." What's wrong about those comments?
I think also when you watch the comments, like, Eller didn't say, he said it in a matter-of-fact way, you know, they're kind of like a junior team. They're really all over the place, and so he didn't mean it in an offensive way. Therrien's not happy about it because he doesn't want his player creating something for the other team to work off of. But Drew, regardless of what you think of it, it doesn't really matter as much as it matters what Edmonton and Montreal think of it.
Well, of course.
And Edmonton gets more motivated. Dallas Eakins is, like, grasping at straws in Edmonton. He finds his bulletin board material, and he throws it to the Oilers, and it's very well attributed to the win. We don't know. I mean, it might have very well played a factor. He has had problems with them.
He's saying it played a factor.
For sure. And Eller has to apologize now and all that stuff. I don't think his intentions were poor, but Edmonton needs something.
Are his comments inaccurate?
I think Eakins blew them out of proportion for a self-serving purpose. So, sure. I mean, he threw Eller under the bus hard. But it's all motivational stuff. So, I mean, he could have done, like, the Bill Belichick, like, very cryptic answers, but Eakins kind of went a full out. He thinks we're a junior team, then, you know, my guys are going to... So, I don't know if I love that part of it. I don't, actually. But he's trying to motivate his team, so this is what he's relying on. And maybe that's a good thing, maybe that's a bad thing.
But, Richie, at this point, Lars Eller, okay, he's having a great season, mm-hmm. whether he's playing with Gallagher or Galchenyuk, yeah. or if he's playing on the top line.
Well, that is the top line, I think, right now, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
The point being, he's been very good this year, and he was good last year. He's really killed the Jets. But mm-hmm. why give a team extra ammo?
I know.
And that's exactly what he's doing. And you don't think that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Jordan Eberle, when they heard that, were just livid and dropping, you know, expletives in the dressing room because of a top player on the other team?
By the way, they play like a junior team.
I'm going to say, he's not wrong with his comments.
That's a problem. That's a problem as you have when, like, players being forthright. You want answers, and then you take answers and you spin them.
Okay, but if you guys think they're a junior team, they beat the Montreal Canadiens.
No, they play like a junior team, meaning, like, you saw them play against the Jets.
That's
fire wagon
young.
Hockey.
Well,
it's great to
team.
Watch.
Yeah, they're a young team, yeah.
It's like saying the Redskins run a college offense. Same thing.
Yeah.
Is that a football analogy?
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, I guess
know what you're saying.
So
they're running the pistol and the read option and everything
else. Whoa.
That'd be more Spurrier related.
Fine, sorry. Sorry to butt in.
Oh, no, you're allowed to butt in anytime, Michael.
Yeah. Well, Drew's in the Wildcat formation right now, so.
I understand why Dallas Eakins made a big deal of the comments, but
he needed
something
to motivate.
Yeah, I mean, he needs something to motivate them 10 games into the first season as head coach.
You take what you can get, no?
You know, maybe he isn't the world's greatest coach, you know. It's amazing how quickly these world's greatest coach titles, you know, Guy Boucher was the world's greatest coach.
Cooper, Eakins, he's done a good job in Tampa, but Eakins, I mean, you know, it's tough to coach in the National Hockey League, guys.
Yeah.
It's not easy. You know, there are not many Scotty Bowmans out there.
Yeah, well,
not many Joel Quenvilles, Mike Babcocks out there.
That's just it.
Have good teams.
Yeah, well, hell helps matters, but they have to also, I mean...
But, I mean, Babcock, to his credit, I mean, Quenvilles' teams are always good in St. Louis, but he coached them well, and he's coached. But you think about Babcock, we're getting off on a tangent a bit here. Babcock took that 0-4 Ducks team to the final.
Mm-hmm. 0-3.
So, 0-3, sorry.
The one that got lost to New Jersey, you're saying.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, that...
That team didn't have the most talent.
Nope.
I mean, it had a very good goaltender.
Yeah, but I mean, he got that team to game 7 of the finals, not just the finals.
Yeah, so Jaguar won nothing game in
Jaguar
game
had
seven.
Those big pads. Remember those big pads?
Of course.
Can't wear those pads anymore, Drew.
Nope. As you tweeted, he's playing like that this season so far.
Yeah. Hold on, you're not on Twitter, though.
I know, but people tell me what you tweet.
Did you just say Ezzy's people tell him what you tweet?
I got people.
People tell me, not Ezzy's people.
Okay. Because if Ezzy's got people, then this whole operation's gone to shambles.
Yeah, you've heard of my people, the Ezraholics.
What do you think about the Flames announcing that Sean Monahan's going to stay all season with
him? Well, that was a no-brainer. He's got 9 points in 9 games. He's unbelievable. We had Craig Button before the draft, and he was saying that he wouldn't be surprised if Monahan was a top 3 or 4 pick. Monahan's been fantastic playing with Sven Berchi and Yuri Hudler. I mean, that's a no-brainer. He might be the best player on the team right now. You got to keep him up there.
Yeah, him and Hudler have been amazing. And Sparchy's been good. That top line's been really good.
If they send him down, and they're not going to, but had they sent him down, do they lose the dressing room at that point in time?
Yeah. You know, Drew, if you want... Yeah, you do. I think you do.
Because...
He's not going to... You know, there are things that it's going to come back, and he's not going to obviously perform at a point-of-game level, likely for the whole season. But... You're exactly right when you talk about the dynamics of a locker room because it's simple. It's simple from far away. But you got to sell tickets.
Yeah.
And you got to, if your guys are playing hard, and they are playing hard right now. Loss yesterday to Phoenix, but they battled.
They beat Los Angeles.
Yeah, they beat Los Angeles. Tough loss to Phoenix yesterday without Giordano.
Yeah.
beat LA in the end of that game, and that, those are hard teams to play against. LA and Phoenix
came back on Saturday night. They lost to San Jose, but they showed a hell of a lot of fortuity.
We're better in that game than I thought they would be. So if you want your coach to coach and you want your team to play hard, you can't just pull, you know, if they never had him, it'd be different, but you can't pull the rug out from under them. He's their number one center right now.
Sure, and he's proving that he belongs. This isn't a case like Grigorenko in Buffalo last year where he was middling through and they decided to keep him.
No, but the only, problem is they actually kept him up for, what was it, 40 games, 30 games, and then they sent him back.
Which never made any sense.
And it didn't make any sense. And the thing with Monahan that most other young players aren't adept at is that he is good defensively.
Right.
He's a very good two-way player.
He's going to be a good one.
He is a good one already. He's going to be a better one. You're right, Ed. Yep.
Leafs, we just heard from Michael Tracos. He said Leafs are going to keep up Morgan Rielly. That also seems to be the right decision.
He didn't say, well, they haven't officially announced it. We should mention
that. He said
he's
playing coy.
Yeah,
he's a year older.
Yeah. He was a 2012 fifth overall pick, sorry. But yeah, they're going to keep him up because he's in their top four. Richie mentioned it earlier. He's playing with Cody Franzen. Yeah. And they can't send him back because they need him.
And the only other one really worth pointing out is what Pittsburgh does with Olli Maatta.
That's a guy that I don't know if they should keep because...
I don't know enough about Olli Maatta because I haven't seen him play. Yeah. But I know that with Letang coming back, from what I've read, people think he still should stay up. I can't really comment because I haven't seen him play. Riley's a player.
Yeah.
And Riley can... wheel, as Michael said, and he can move the puck, and you can't have too many of those. And Monahan just like rock solid. So if remember their defense, they bring back Scuderi, but their defense has been a question mark and been an issue for them. If he's going to be, and you're trying to win the cup this year, so you pay him a couple million at the end of it, fine. But you're trying to win the cup. If he gives you the best chance right now, when you have Crosby and Malkin in their primes,
Should really ask our friend Mike Colligan, who we have on regularly on this show, about it. But I've watched him play a few times. Remember, he played for the London Knights last year. Yeah. He's been playing a lot less than Morgan Rielly. Like, he's been playing sheltered minutes, probably 10 minutes a game. And the reviews are okay. He hasn't been putting up huge offensive numbers, but the reviews are pretty good. And I think that's probably the most difficult decision, because Richie mentioned Letang coming back. But the problem with the Pens, as we've talked about probably the last three years even, is that the sixth and seventh guys are pretty weak. Derek Englund, Robert Bartuzzo, those guys are kind of weak. Yeah. And that's what he's going to play once Letang comes back.
He's playing 15 minutes a game.
So I'm interested to see if they keep Olli Maatta up there.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. When we come back, rapid fire on TSN.
What was that?
90. What was going on there, Remo?
Oh, I thought it was going to go to music, sorry.
Okay.
Attaboy, Remo.
Now you can go to break.
I can relax there behind the mic.
If he was any more relaxed, he'd be comatose.
We have a good little surprise coming up for Mr. Pollock over here coming up in the next segment. Stay tuned for that, folks.
TSN 1290.
Okay. You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Glory days indeed here with NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Not just glory days, but glory years, as somebody in this room is turning 30 years of age tomorrow. I'm already 70, as we've well documented on the show. Ezzy has cracked the 30-year-old barrier, despite all doctors' predictions. Richard Pollock, a happy 30th birthday tomorrow.
Oh, thank you.
It's okay, just for the listeners out there, Richie officially turns 30 tomorrow. So we're about 4 hours, just over 4 hours.
What time are you born?
I think 2 in the afternoon, 2:16 in the afternoon, I believe.
So okay. I went out before the show, and I got a little birthday cake here for Richie. And we've arranged for a special caller to wish Richie a happy birthday.
Is this Bubba Toots? Toots, are you on the line?
I want to say happy 30th birthday, doll.
Thanks. Thank you, Bubba.
You should have many, many more healthy ones.
Very nice. Thank you.
And I should be around to celebrate.
You should, absolutely.
Absolutely. It goes.
I want to be around to celebrate them with you.
I hope so, too, Baba.
I love you.
Love you, too.
That's Richard.
Thanks for calling.
Oh,
That's
thanks,
very nice.
Thanks, Bubba Toots.
That's Bubba Toots. Amazing. Gary Lawless's favorite.
That's very nice.
Bubba Toots.
Yep.
So calling to wish Richard a happy 30th birthday. Now, what are the plans, Richie? I mean, big dinner tomorrow night. You know, a lot of people invited over to the house. Is that what
we got some plans? Yeah, you know, we have some desserts. People over. I'm not worried. My mom's worried that not all the desserts will be eaten. I told her that don't worry. The group of friends that we have, there'll be no concern about the desserts being eaten. So that was very nice of you guys to arrange for my Baba to call.
Okay, hold on a second.
91 years old.
Hold on a second. Before, yeah.
Your Baba, not
again,
you.
Yes.
Well, you were in a class in the 20s, so.
Thank you to Richie's Baba Toots for calling in. And there's only one thing left to do here. We got the cake here. You got to light the candles and blow out your birthday cake, Richie.
We must have some happy birthday music. You know, you say it's your birthday, something along those lines.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do.
Okay.
You came prepared for this segment, Michael.
You have to call your grandmother.
Did she remember you?
I don't know.
Hopefully not, because she wouldn't have answered the phone if she had.
Let's be honest. None of us want to remember Remus, but we do on a weekly basis. Well, congratulations. Blow it. You still have enough oxygen in your lungs to blow out the two candles that Ezzy got you. So that's always good. My concern is Ezzy's come equipped with a bunch of plates for all of us to cut the cake and a knife.
Don't see any forks.
There's no forks.
Well, you know, well, it'll be like kind of like a picnic, you know, like we'll just eat with our hands. But I'm a little bit worried, Drew, that this cake is only going to be enough for you.
It's a pretty good sized cake. I'm confident that there's going to be enough for the four of us to have some cake here.
You guys are too nice to me.
Yes,
thank you for arranging that.
This is it. It's all downhill from now, though. This is it. You know, once you hit 30, you know.
Oh boy.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm not going to be on the show for the rest of the show because I'm going to be cutting and eating this cake.
I wouldn't assume anything else. Do you have rapid fire ready there, Ream? There you go. We'll do it.
Rapid fire.
According to TSN's Darren Dreger, the Detroit Red Wings are looking to move Jordan Tootoo to free up the cap space to call up Gustav Nyquist from the NHL.
He's a good player.
What teams, if any, do you think would be in the market for Jordan Tootoo? Keep in mind he's got a $1.9 million cap hit this year and next.
Some teams probably would be, but Jordan Tootoo isn't, you know, I don't think as good as he was a couple of years ago, at least, you know, as physical, as engaged. Look at the teams that let go of Jordan Tootoo.
Hang on. Ezzy got cake and
on his
icing
iPhone.
All over his iPhone.
Well, I'm trying to take a picture for Instagram with the cake and Richie in it, and I got cake on the iPhone.
Just don't eat the iPhone and we'll be okay. Jordan Tootoo, you know, let go by Nashville and let go, obviously looking to be let go by Detroit to sign him to the deal. Not this past offseason, the offseason before. You know, he can score a little bit for a fourth line right winger, Drew, but he doesn't come with a cheap ticket. And, you know, the idea of his physical, he needs to be physically engaged all the time to make it worth his while. So I think there's going to be a market for him because somebody's going to think in a different maybe system and he doesn't have that. You know, 1.9 isn't nothing, but it's not a huge ticket. And if Detroit takes back salary in this deal, which seems to be kind of implied based on the rumblings, then I can definitely see somebody looking to hop on the Jordan Tootoo train. No pun intended there.
Staying with Darren Dreger and reports from him, he's also reported that
there's icing on the mic and on the cord.
And on the table.
I'm having a little trouble. You know what? Remus should be over here cutting the cake. I'm on the air here. I have a tough job.
You brought this cake. You arranged this whole thing. You can cut it.
There's cake everywhere.
Remus, you have a piece though, eh?
There's Drew, no fork.
That piece is for you, Drew.
I'm not eating with my hands.
One. Why not? You eat anything else with your hands.
Yeah, but it's not like icky.
What a crew.
I don't
Remus, like, you're getting the biggest piece, by the way.
I'm not eating like this icing-filled cake. Like,
can you play the...
Gross.
By the way, nothing wrong with icing-filled cake. Can you play the...
I'm going to eat it. I just don't want to hold it in my hand and get it all over my hands.
You got icing on the...
Maybe put it in
It's hard to cut cake and also be on the air.
Put it in between two pieces of bread. I'll eat it like a sandwich.
Did you just say you would eat a cake sandwich?
It's a joke. We don't have any utensils.
Do you have bread, though?
No. This is a radio station.
Are you sure?
By the way, I just realized I should have given you the first piece. Now Drew's going to want second.
You didn't even light the candles, too.
Yeah, he lit the candles.
Yeah, I lit the candles.
Oh, I didn't see.
Yeah, he lit the candles.
Where have you been?
Just for the record, this is a ice cream cake, right?
No.
No, because
it's a regular cake.
No, it's...
Oh, it's a regular cake.
I think ice cream cakes have jumped the shark a little
bit. No, they haven't.
Yeah, no. I prefer yeah. When Richie's mom makes a birthday cookie.
Well, those are the best. But Remus, yeah. Why were you so engaged? Why are you so engaged when we talk about?
Hold on,
about-
Remus is engaged.
Stop.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah. Big weekend for you.
It's a good point, though, Richie. Why is he so engaged in the show when we're talking about cake?
Yeah.
But, you know.
Talk about hockey. Doesn't care.
Right. That's exactly right.
At least he admits it. You know,
I've been saying this the whole time. I'm not on here to talk about hockey at all. I'm here to talk about nonsense.
Speaking of nonsense.
The segment's great for you.
Veteran defenseman Roman Hamrlik retired this week after a 20-year NHL career with 7 teams. The former first overall pick in the 1992 NHL draft ended his career after playing 1,395 regular season games and making 3 All-Star games. Mm-hmm. He also won gold with the Czech Republic at the Nagano Olympics. Of all the players drafted in 1992, who had the best NHL career?
By the way, do you remember who Roman Hamrlik was traded for? He went to Edmonton. It happened to be like a Hockey Night in Canada special game. I think it was in December. I believe he scored in his first game as well, if I recall, from the right point. But Hamrlik scored. But I believe he was traded for. Remember Jason Bond Sr.?
Sure.
Yeah, I think Phil Esposito was. Glenn Sather pulled a fast one on Phil Esposito on that trade. But the best player in that draft. What about Boris Mironov, picked by the Jets, 27th overall, second round?
Well, was this the 92 draft?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I looked at the wrong draft.
I put the link in the show plan for you to look at.
That's the year Alexei Yashin was taken.
Yes. Yeah. Second overall.
Okay, there were some good ones here. I made a little list here. I did some research. There were some good picks. You got Brent Gretzky in there. You got Yuri Lehtinen in the fourth round. You've got Valerie Bure in the second round.
Darren McCarty.
Sergei Bauten. 17th overall. Was I looking at the right list?
What about, he's 16th overall.
I'm going to go with 42nd overall, Sergei Brelin.
Nice work.
3-time Stanley Cup champion, 765 games played, 308 career points. That guy was the most versatile player for the Devils for so long, killed penalties, you know, and I mentioned the 3 Stanley Cups, so I like Sergei Brelin in that year.
I'm going to throw in a few names. Andre Nikoleshin, 47th, Kirk Malpe, 65th. Some classic names right
Cale
there.
Hulse.
Else already.
He certainly wasn't the best player, but I'm impartial to Winnipeg Jets draft pick Timu Newman in that year.
Yep. Teppo's brother.
That's not true, is it?
Yeah.
Is it Teppo's brother?
It was Teppo's brother.
Oh, I didn't know
Newman.
That.
How many Newman ins?
You know, the Jets got Nikolai Habibulin in that draft.
9th round.
204th overall. Still playing.
Yeah. Exactly
pretty
right.
Good pick.
Pretty good pick is right.
So remember who Boris Mironov was traded for from the Jets?
Yeah. Boris Mironov was traded for Mats Lindgren.
No, it was Lindgren and Mironov for Dave Manson, wasn't
it? That's right, sorry. Yeah.
And Mironov went to Chicago for like Danny Cleary and those guys.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, by the way, Richie, have you noticed that Drew's piece of cake is gone?
Yeah, he took...
All right, guys, we're wrapping up the show here.
Okay. That's it for NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Jarmo Kekäläinen, General Manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets. A big thank you to Michael Trakos from the National Post. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available on iTunes and on tsn1290.ca. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and IllegalCurve.com. For Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We'll see you Saturday with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
That segment was amazing.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.